Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Welcome, everybody, to All About Guitar. We got a great show for you tonight. And I got a bunch of great people in studio tonight. And I'll introduce them as the story progresses. First of all, I want to... our guest tonight is Carl Verheyen. And... real quick, I want to explain how I first heard about Carl. A friend of mine that I've known for many years, another guitar player, songwriter, had come up to me and said, this is many years ago, and he said, I'm taking lessons from this guy. He's just really good. You got to check him out. He's just really awesome. And he mentioned his name, and I've been following him ever since. And I have him in studio. I brought him in to reminisce a little bit. Michael Harrington. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show. It's great.
See, I don't lead you wrong.
That's right. No. You were the one who taught. You were the one who turned me on to Little Feet, and I thank you forever for that. Wow. They're great. They're killer. Wow. You were the guy. Okay. And there's another interesting story too that I found out from Carl later was it was you that kind of told him about Supertramp, which he ended up having the gig with. So
I guess I'm the info man. I don't know.
Yeah, you're the linchpin.
So anyway, and then also too, we're going to talk a little bit about this guitar that Carl had made by LSL, and we have Lance in again. He's been on before, and if you want to hear our show just about LSL guitars on the Flow Guitar, it was the December 30th, 2013 show, and we went through a bunch of the different guitars. So, Lance, welcome to the show, too.
Thanks.
So let me start out first. Let's play a clip of you, because you've been – a lot of people globally know you as the guitar player for Supertramp now. I'm going to play a clip from Goodbye Stranger, which kind of shows what you're about in terms of some killer lead work.
Thank you.
Thank you and good night. No, just kidding. Welcome, Carl. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
That's a killer. That's just a killer.
So is that off the Some Things Never Change album?
It was the Best of Times.
Oh, Best of Times. That's right.
The Best of Times. But there was several versions of that, evidently. There's another copy I have. It was just called Live. That was an import.
Ah.
And it was the same.
I got that one, too. I found it in Ireland. Hey, this has my picture on it. Why don't I own it? You got to have your ego shelf, all the stuff. So.
But anyway, give us a little bit of your background, how you started, what you and influences.
I was born very, very young.
Very young.
No, let's see. I was first turned on to the guitar by Roger McGuinn of the Byrds.
Oh,
I was
cool.
Big Byrds fan, big major league Byrds fan. And that 12-string still jumps out of the radio for me today. And, of course, George Harrison,
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got to be 12 years old and 13 years old, I started getting into some of the more virtuoso players like Clapton and, of course, Hendrix. And got really into Mike Bloomfield. And then I kind of went back a little bit and checked out Albert King and B.B. King and Freddie King. And then, let's see, there came a little point in my life where I could go on forever, so I'll try to wrap it. I was playing five nights a week in a club with my Martin guitar. I got gig when I was 17, but they wouldn't let me start till I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I was singing Van Morrison songs and Joni Mitchell songs and singer-songwriter stuff. Brought my own PA in, mic'd my guitar. This guy came in, but I realized I needed to learn some things that would rest my voice because it was a four-hour gig.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy came in and said, "Hey, man, I like the way you play. You want to get together and jam tomorrow?" So I said, "Yeah." So I go over to his house. He's an older dude, and he pulls out some music. And I'm like 19 years old, and the first chord on the music was an F major 7th, right? One of these. So the second chord was a D minor 7 flat 5, and I'd never seen that before. So I say, well, this is D minor. Let's see if I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the fifth. I could flat it. I said, is this right? And he goes, yeah, but, that's a better voice. Of course, you can use the open string. If you want an A flat in the bass, you could use this one. This is nice. A lot of people like the third on top, the seventh on top. You can put the seventh on the bottom. This is probably a common one. A lot of people like this in the bass. And, of course, that's probably my favorite. Anyway, the guy showed me like 25 voicings of this one chord before noon, and I just went, man, what is that? And it was sort of my entrance down the long, dark highway of jazz. So in my 20s, I sort of immersed myself into jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I really got into it. I learned hundreds of tunes, standards, and can still play many of them today. I still mm-hmm. have a few of them in the brain there. Probably I knew 150, and now it's down to about 35. But I learned a lot of chord melody.
I remember one you taught me. Here's That Rainy Day.
Yeah. Right, I'm still not.
What did you use to study?
On and on. I just went to clubs and watched guys play.
Oh, you just picked it up? I mean, you didn't, because I remember when I was in school, Duke Miller gave us the George Smith method, had the chord melody type of thing.
I had a teacher that I never took a lesson from, but I was in a band with his wife, Ronnie Eshte. Great jazz
player.
Ron,
yeah, we had him on the show.
And then there was a cat, Joe DiOrio, who I was really enamored mm-hmm. with, who taught me to write everything down. But anyway, I got into this jazz thing, and I was immersed in it for maybe 74 through around 1980. So I put a good 6-7 years into it. Then I was driving in my car, corner of Riverside and Laurel.
Okay.
had a
it's
white,
not that far from you.
I had a white Datsun wagon at the time with a Fender Twin in the back permanently.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to the radio, and this Joe Walsh solo came on the radio that just blew my mind. It was so heavy. It's in a tune called Those Shoes by the Eagles.
Yeah.
You know? That tune.
Yeah.
And his solo just slayed me. I had to pull over. And you know what happened? The skies opened up. A beam of light shone down upon me and said, you must learn everything you dig at this moment. And I went, you know, I haven't bent strings in 6 years. And I have a roommate. I had a roommate who was this guy. You know, learning.
Craig Copeland?
No, a guy named Pat Colgan, a classical dude. Walk by that dude's room and go, that's another lifetime. Do not listen to that. That is Bach. That's another lifetime. I'm the jazz guy. And at that point, I just went, you know what, man? I dig that. I dig Chet. Right. I dig Lenny Bro. I dig Joe Walsh. I dig Mike Bloomfield. I dig Albert Lee. And I'm going to learn everything I dig. And that's kind of what happened to me. I just got into this position where, okay, I could play jazz and I like it, but now I'm going to get proficient at other things too. Because if you enjoy them, why be a snob? You know, why be a purist if you really dig all that stuff? So,
well, a lot of people probably don't remember at that time too. In the music scene, especially in rock, it was a melding of styles, and everybody was pulling stuff together. Mm-hmm. In the early 70s, fusion was becoming a big thing with the rock and the jazz, and progressive rock with the classical and the jazz, the classical and the rock with the heavy backbeat. So you were, you know, that was kind of the cool thing to do, which is cool.
Great. Know, and it's just part of my personality. And what's cool is you listen to James Taylor play acoustic guitar, and that informs some part of your electric playing that you never would have, you know, the metal dudes would never have cross-referenced that. You
right.
know what I mean? So it just makes you a much more broad, depth-having kind of guy, I think. Just being more styles.
Well, I'm going to play another clip from from the live Supertramp album, which is a great wah-wah thing that you're doing on here, and we're going to talk about a little bit about the gear. This is a segment of Bloody Well Right. Now, what was the gear that were you using? What did you use on Supertramp? And then what I wanted to ask you, too, is how has that changed with your solo touring and stuff? And then also your session. I know that's a lot to ask, but how is it different and why?
Well, in my own band, I use an A-B system. So it's a pedal board that goes into a wah-wah, then into an A-B box made by this guy named Burkhard Leila from over in Europe. And he's a beast because his stuff is just built like a tank. You know, it's built like an AMG, typical German guy. So that dude, he gave me this A-B box and then said, do you like it, Kyle? And I said, no, because I don't want to have to look down and find B when I'm trying to sing. I want to have one button. When I play it, when I hit it, it's A. When I hit it again, it's B, and then I'm back to A. I never want to look down there. So he made a mod in it and called it the Verheyen model. So I use that with my own band and use a clean rig and a wet rig. Mm-hmm. I mean, a clean rig and a distortion rig. With Supertramp, I do that same thing, stereo clean, wet dry distortion, but I have a third set of amps or amp for just the power chords and the doubling of bass lines. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's a lot of that where you're playing like in Crime of the Century and a song called Crime. I'm trying to think. From Now On has that. Rudy has that. A bunch of these tunes mm-hmm. have the where you need to double the bass line. And I don't want that to be my solo sound. I want my solo sound to be real special. And by special, I mean just saturated and have the right amount of delay on it and everything like that. So my rig for that recording is two Fender Twins for clean, mm-hmm. with a little ping pong delay between them, and then the distortion is a Dr. Z SRZ 61 head. I come out of the. This is getting kind of technical. I come out of the speaker out into a THD hot plate.
Okay.
And that thing has a line out. I feed a Lexicon PCM 41. Now I'm at line level out of that, and I go into the effects return of a 100-watt Marshall. So that's the wet side. For the dry side, it comes straight out of the Z into the hot plate, straight out into another cabinet. So now I got one cabinet that is just real dry, another has the delay, and I really don't need reverb in those big arenas. So that's my distortion. Then for the third channel, I'm using on that tour, I think it was an old Tweed Deluxe that I use for the power chords.
For the crunch.
Yeah, and it's a big pedal board for that. My own band is just the Dr. Z and Marshall for the distortion, and either two AC-30s mm-hmm. or two Twins or one of each. But my latest acquisition of about a year ago, I got a 100-watt Hi-Watt from 1976, and that thing is the most gorgeous clean amp. So now I'm on the search for another one. And so, I found one, but the guy wanted to sell me the cabinet, too. And I already have four 4x12 cabinets. Don't need any more. Thanks.
Now, with the THD, the hot plate, are you using that to attenuate the...
You can.
If you're or do you leave it open on...
Wide open if I can, you know.
Yeah.
And I like 16 ohms because that transformer's working full speed ahead, you know.
Right, right.
If you can feed a 4x12 with it, man, you're happy.
And your distortion is the amp. You're not using...
No, I'm using pedals, too.
Okay.
So my idea is with a Strat, with single coil pickups, I think you've got to jump through a few more hoops to make a great distortion sound. You know, I mean, I could put a humbucker through that amp and it would be great right away. With single coils, you got to jump through some hoops, but I think you get more character, you get a more personal sound because mm-hmm. you've done that, you know. So I have four doors distortion pedals for my solo sound, you know, either this one, which is nice and fat and creamy, and or this one, which is a little harsher, or a third one, which I use with Gibsons. I keep it just mainly for Gibsons. Or a fourth one that's like a univibe kind of a pedal. You know, it's distortion with an octave.
Octavia.
Octavia, yeah.
And then what kind of wah were you using there? Was that a Vox?
I think that one, believe it or not, was an Ernie Ball wah-wah that they gave me for free. And I said, this sounds good. I'll keep it.
I
have about 12 wah-wahs. I mean, they're everywhere. There's three or four that aren't on pedal boards, and then there's five on pedal boards. And they're, I mean, you know, wah-wahs multiply at my house.
Well, one of the things I'm going to play some clips, we're going to get into tone in a minute, is I have your album Take One Step. And there's a video. This is a great. I recommend getting. This is on AIX Records, and it's in surround. You have a surround mix on here too, which I'm a big surround fan. But the interesting thing is, it shows some pictures, and you're talking about how you wrote the songs, but it shows some of the stuff how you mic'd it. It was one of the things I thought was really cool. And I had experimented with this myself on some sessions. You had the 4x12 cabinet. You had two mics. You had one really close, like a 57. Mm-hmm. And then you had just a little bit away, about 3 feet. It looked like it was 3 feet. It was hard to tell. Mm-hmm. It was in like a room with a bunch of equipment in there. And then you had a mic out the door, like about 12 feet or 13 feet away.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I heard about that originally was Jimmy Page did that, and he would mix the mics, and it gives you this huge, huge sound. It was kind of cool.
Big, yeah. You got to when you're making a record, you have to determine, well, when I'm making a record, I have to determine which sound is going to be Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Because I believe that when you hear those old Frank Capital recordings, this big band comes in, and they're swinging away, and you go, God, that is glorious. What could be better? When Frank comes in, he's really glorious. Mm-hmm. So to do that, you know, you need an engineer who gets that, who gets the ambient miking thing.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, let's listen. I'm going to play a clip. I'm going to play a kind of a rocker thing where you really go nuts. This is from the title, Take One Step. This is a really great one. We'll talk a little bit because it exemplifies. These next clips I'm going to talk about really show the versatility that you have with the tone. I mean, the sounds you're pulling from the different guitars is incredible, and it's why you are you. So here's Take One Step. Definitely tops. I mean, you're hearing all these layered guitars, and like you said, it's just like, what else could be better than that? And then you just rip right into that.
Well,
leaf.
So one thing that happened there was that there was rhythm guitars going on, and they drop out for the solo, which is cool.
Right.
And they came back for these chords, you know. But that track, if you listen to the whole thing, it starts with a Strat, right, doing that.
Right.
And then I add an acoustic 12-string, a distorted Telecaster, and then when this line, that's two Les Pauls, a 54 and a 72, and one's played through, I think this little Gibson Falcon amp turned to 10, and no pedals, and then the other one's played through like a Tweed Deluxe turned to 10, and stereo. I think I use an SG and a Les Paul. And then the solo is a 72 Les Paul.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and there's another wacky thing in there. There's a Gretsch guitar that's very out of phase. We made it purposely out of phase in the middle of a verse.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, check that out. It's in the second verse, and it's kind of headphones.
So that lead on there is a Les Paul.
Yeah, it's a Paul in there, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I got an old 72, but I took the PAFs out of a 175 that I have. And put the real 1958 PAFs in it, saying to myself, in this jazz guitar, do I really need PAFs? Or could I make this 72 like a poor man's 58?
Mm-hmm.
Which I
that
was a better idea.
The when you do like your album work as opposed to session work, and session work I know, and you can see in the video on this disc, you can see the rack, that you have a rack system that in the background there's a system. But when you're doing your own stuff, do you tend to just like the guitar through the amp?
Well, I have hundreds of other pedals that aren't on pedal boards, and I generally just string stuff together. And I like to do pre-production at my house. Like I'm thinking of a certain part, the bridge of a certain tune, I'll take out three or four amps, try different guitars, try different pedals, and I go, that's the sound for this section, and then make a note of it in a notebook so that when I get to the studio I have the first thing I'm going to try. You waste so much less time that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, this is my first idea. If it doesn't fly, I'll find something else.
Mm-hmm.
But
And then that Les Paul that's doing the lead, is that the Dr. Z that's cranked?
No, that sounds like this 68 Plexi of mine, 50-watt Marshall. That sounds like that.
Oh, okay, because that has a nice growl to it. Nice. Okay, well, listen, we're going to talk more here. Tone, I'm going to go in. I'm going to play a clip from another piece that you had. I'm going to change it up. We're going to go to acoustic guitar. This is a classical guitar lead that you're doing in the middle of a great tune, Bells of April. And you can, on the album, you talk about where that came from, the original piece. You can mention that too. But here's, listen to this. If you want to hear Tone, this is Tone.
Right before the 335 solo.
Oh, that's,
that's what happens. I have a 68 335 that starts right there.
Oh, okay. No, yeah. No, I was the acoustic guitar just like came out to me. So what were you using there?
I've got a 1980 Ramirez that I bought in Spain many years ago. And I went to the Ramirez factory and all the guitars were crap. I'm going, man, these are not very good. But I had learned how to play the Venezuelan Waltz No. 3 by Antonio Loro. Mm-hmm. So I was pulling them down, and when I played that piece, they go, ah, you're a musician. Come with us. And they took me into the back room where the real guitars were. But the ones out in the showroom were all just like student model type stuff. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, this is Ramirez? These are the most famous acoustic nylon strings in the world, but
well, the sustain on that guitar is incredible. I mean, you're holding those notes. I mean, it's really rings. Anything special recording that? I mean,
well, I'm not sure what mic we used. There used to be a studio in town called Devonshire,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't do it there. But the day I got that guitar, the day I got home, the first session I ever played it on, I was doing like a TV show. And the second engineer went, just banged a mic right into the wood and put the first big scratch in it.
Oh,
I was so bummed. And but you know, you that's first one. It's like your car, right? That first scratch is a bitch, you know. So, but I don't know what mic we use on that. It sounds something fat and warm, like a big old Neumann or a Telefunken or something. Doesn't sound like a condenser mic to me.
No, it's a great sound. Well, let me show you here. There's another clip I have from Bells, where it's a lot of layers of guitars. It's the opening of the tune. And then we can talk a little more about that piece. But this is a good, again, it's a good example of orchestration where you're playing different tones against each other and the colors. And I think this is important because listening to your music and the stuff that you're doing, you're really good at layering the stuff and making it all
clear.
Man,
you get it, Jeff. I'm blown away that you, because, I mean, to me, that's a big part of the state of the art of guitar playing. We've heard everybody shred for all these years, you know, since the 80s, all these shred guys. To me, that just, I buy that record, maybe listen to it once and file it. But it's the stuff that bears repeated listening, like the textures and layers.
Yeah, every time you listen, you hear something else.
Right.
So take a listen, and Mike's going to definitely listen to this again because he's going to hear another guitar every time he listens to it. Here we go, Bells of April.
Wow.
Just, I mean,
that's cool.
That kind
I
of layer. First of all, I love the opening thing where you do those sustained guitar chords.
So that's what that's when you say there was a big rack in the picture. That's pretty much all I use that old 80s rack for, you know.
Yeah.
I've updated it over the years, but I just don't use it that much. But you can swell in all those beautiful chords and infinite reverbs and multiple delays and stuff like that. It's really fun. That's a Strat.
The sustain, yeah.
Yeah, and then I know that I heard the Rickenbacker 12 string come in. Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 that bit. Some acoustics.
What's the guitar that's doing that little syncopated?
This thing here. Oops, that's out of tune.
Is that a Strat?
I think that's a Strat and an acoustic in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
it's beautiful. It's panned, right?
So this tune was inspired by, you remember Quicksilver Messenger Service?
Mm-hmm.
So they had an album, I think it was just called Quicksilver. It had Pride of Man on it. Mm-hmm. So the last tune on side two was a song called The Fool. And it was like this 12-minute song that goes on, all this stuff happens, and then at the very end, the guy sings, I don't know, 8 lines. And I go, man, that is so cool, because you don't think it's going to be a vocal tune. At the very end, it comes in.
Yeah.
And so I did that.
Yeah,
that
no,
a vocal
I,
at the very
now
end.
I'm only because of time,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
only
yeah.
playing the clip, because it's a long piece.
Yeah, it's a long piece.
But yeah, you're right. And it was like, wow, because I was listening to, like, what am I going to pull out of here guitar-wise? And I'm like going, and at the very end, he starts singing. But,
yeah, yeah.
But
and that theme that I'm, the melody I'm singing, you've heard it because it's a theme that occurs earlier. There's like 5 themes in there.
Right.
And it was funny because I had this bit, you know, I had that from the 70s. And the bass player in my band, Dave Morata, goes, man, you really ought to resurrect that. That's a really cool song. It was called Travel Stories. But it sounded a little too much like Pat Metheny.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, remember I was in my jazz period, right?
Right.
So it was a little too Metheny-ish, so I still have it. It's a big, thick chart, you know, about 20 pages. And
well, that's what you were saying on the disc. There's an interview, you explained the song, and it was originally this long song.
Yeah.
And I guess the guys, you played it before, and it's like, oh, this thing's too long.
Yeah, we're trying to do it at, like, jazz clubs or Dante's or something, and these guys are like, it's falling off the piano and everything.
Jazz Odyssey.
Jazz Odyssey. He wrote this.
So you pulled a little bit, you pulled some of the themes out of there, and which and it's a beautiful piece.
Oh, thanks.
But also, too, again, it's how you you can hear all the guitars. Now, I have to give credit to the guy that engineered this.
Yeah, the guy's name is Bernie Matthews, and unfortunately, he moved to Rochester.
What?
I think he got a gig teaching at Eastman or something, and he thought, you know, I'm out of here. He's got more kids than he knows what to do with, I think. And
yeah, but I mean, it's our loss here of him not being here. But
I
like the fact that he's teaching because he's definitely knows what he's doing because you can hear everything. And it's very easy layering guitars. I've done stuff where Mike, too, on your stuff, it can get mushy. It can get really overwhelming.
One thing I believe in is that tubes stack up in different harmonics. In other words, you can put a part down with EL34 power tubes,
mm-hmm.
and then if you're going to put something next to it, don't use that same amp. Use something with 6L6s, 6V6s. Use different tubes because the way the harmonics stack up will make it richer and more wonderful.
Now, do you tend to, in the tones that you're getting, are they basically just recording it flat and you're making it work by the difference of the amp? Or because one of the things I was taught as an engineer too is you can use EQ to pull them into their own little pocket.
That's probably more what we do in mixdown. You know, it's like, hey, that guitar isn't speaking. Let's take the bottom out of it or suck some mids out of it, so it's just got its own space in the mix. Here's the problem with layering anything: if you visualize a speaker, and I'm holding my hands up and down, the bottom here. He's going to get a picture of me doing this. Okay, the bass
it
is
coming. It was that big.
Yeah, it was that big. The bass comes out here, right?
Uh-huh.
And up here in the tweeters, you've just got the sibilance on the voice and some synthesizers and the cymbals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's and maybe the high end of the acoustic guitar. Everything else is fighting for the mid-range. And that means the B3, the piano, the horns, the guitars, even most of the vocal. So in other words, if I have to play a part like, say, that's going to be lost in the track.
Yeah.
So now I'm going, higher register. Even that's going to be lost in the treble. What I try to do is find something in the trebly.
I noticed you switched to the back two pickups, which was, yeah. I was thinking of as like go out of that out of phase sound.
Yeah, get a little bit more bright.
That cuts more.
Yeah, and maybe use an upper you know, those kind of higher voicings, and you have something that'll peek through. Mm-hmm. And I learned that in the studio sideman world where you're the final take and you're just not in it, you know, and they don't call you back because you didn't really contribute anything. I went, well, if I'm going to contribute here, I better play those parts like on Rainy Night in Georgia or mm-hmm, some of Steve Cropper's great ideas, you know. They cut through and they add something to the groove and to the track. So,
well, there's a reason why in the like the Wrecking Crew, they were using those tellies. Those tellies cut.
Yeah, they really did.
They did really cut. And then later the Strat.
Yeah.
One of the sounds that I think to me identifies you, you get this really glassy sound out of the Strat. And I'm going to play a couple of clips. This is the song Dusk. And there's this these two clips are really important because it's a really cool sound. And not too many people get it. And it's like, I think it's something worth mentioning. We can talk a little bit about how you did that. How do you get the sound, especially with the amp? But this is the first clip from Dusk. That's that. I call that the glassy sound.
Yeah,
and that's I assume that's a Strat.
Yeah, that's a '65 Strat. Well before I knew Lance, because this was done in about 2005, so mm-hmm. 10 years ago. And I think I used my live rack, so I made it stereo with my own delay. Okay. And there might be a tiny bit of chorus to break it up, but you'll never guess what two amps they are because they sound super clean. And I'm a big fan of super clean. You know,
right.
Clean.
I would think they're twins.
You'd think they're twins, but I used the a JTM 45, an old Marshall 45
really?
Watt, and I used that that 50 watt JMP 50 from 1968. So I used two old Marshalls and just turned them up enough to where they just gave me a little bit of hair on them, but not enough. You know, you can still get this sound. Kind of.
Yeah, that you get that chime.
Yeah,
now you're hitting
that.
Harmonics there.
Yeah, I love that sound.
Let me play the other clip, which shows a little more of the bloom from the amp, mm-hmm. and also to it, it's a good one that shows your taste, your melodic taste. I think this is really a cool. This is a cool section. This is another part of that same song.
Thank you. We just played that song on tour. We
heard a little Hendrix moment in there.
Yeah, I heard that little Hendrix fill in there.
Yeah.
But it's just that tone. It's to die for.
Those are the two Marshalls, which is so unlike me to use Marshalls for that. But it's just one of those moments in the studio where you go, I wonder what this would sound like. Stereo 50-watt Marshall type sounds.
And it worked. Yeah. Now, speaking of tone, let's get into this guitar. Mm-hmm. You had talked with Lance, and you wanted a guitar made that. Mm-hmm. And what I want to know is what you were asking for, and I'm going to ask Lance now, too, of what he had to do to get that dream guitar that you wanted.
Well, I came to Lance with a 61 Strat that I'd been taking on the road for a while, Seafoam Green, mm-hmm. and I'd been using it on a lot of records, and it was just ground zero neck. So the first thing I wanted Lance to do is measure the neck and get me that neck, which he nailed. But we got it, we put strings on it, went, still a little too thick, and pulled a little off here and there, and just really got that right so it felt like home.
Was that a B-style?
Was that a B-style?
A Fender B-style with the more curved
face? It wasn't a C.
His original? No, it was... It was a medium C, as I recall.
A medium C.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah.
Most of the 60s Strats had the B style type. That really.
No.
No. No, really.
His is sort of kind of a shallow C, as I recall.
I have a 65 that's more shallow.
And you know that's not Seafoam Green.
I know
it took the neck out of
it's
that.
It's Daphne Blue, maybe.
It's blue.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a blue.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's just gotten old and looks
old.
I know that guitar. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then I have a 58 and. The 58 is a guitar that Seymour Duncan told me. We were in Pittsburgh. I was playing a concert, and he was there. And he said, you know, you're a Strat guy. You should go buy this guitar. It's at Voltage Guitars. Remember that place? So I went down there, and I said, what is it? And he goes, it's a 58 Strat, and it has the best three sounding pickups in a row. In other words, the neck pickup blends perfectly into the middle, which blends perfectly into the, you know, it all sounds like one perfect guitar. So I went down there, and the guy wanted $7,500 for it. This is way back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. before it became $48,000 guitar, you know. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. I was down there, and I saw it hanging on the wall, picked it up. It was the perfect weight. So I told Lance, well, anyway, I bought it. I went home and said, you know what? I can't live without it. I better hit the flower shop. Show my wife, honey, these are for you. What is it? She knows the trick now, man. When I bought a Flying V, she goes, what is it? I go, it's a Flying V, honey. My name is Verheyen. I got to have a V. But isn't that a Gibson? Yes, it is, dear. Well, don't we have two Les Pauls and an SG and a 335? And a, you know, I go, yes, we do, but it's Carina wood.
Oh, we don't have
Isn't that mahogany, honey? Yes, it is, dear, but it's different. Anyway, so back to my collaboration with Lance. So I said, it's got to have this neck. We did that. Then I said, I really believe light guitars are better than heavy guitars. That's just my thing. I think you can control them. I think that when you play the B string, you know, you hang this guitar like this and you play the B string and you get some wiggle in the body, I think it's reacting. The body has something.
Now, is that Alder?
Yeah,
because Alder is the sound.
Yeah, I think so too. So we got into it, and then what we did was we measured the output of the pickups, and
we did a lot of pickup work. First time out, didn't?
Yeah, because we didn't realize that the pickup is giving you this much output here, but it's giving you much different output after it goes through the three pots and comes out here.
Yeah.
So it comes out the jack. So we got that right because I believe that really powerful pickups aren't really good for tone either.
Yeah.
So
the higher the gain, the less
range. You can always go up in gain later on down the line.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't take it away.
Well, you had told me that when I visited your shop, and it's like these, you know, they're the little bit lighter, the... It doesn't have as much output, but you have more frequency.
That's
response.
Interesting because usually you want to get the most gain in other recording aspects.
Right.
You can't add gain later because you're going to add noise. You're going to add some other issues.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, you can boost. You can get more gain.
Well, there's a lot of ways to do it.
Yeah.
You know, in a recording situation, you are going to amplify noise.
Yeah. But I want my pickups to have tone, and so
right.
And I have
so
specific.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
With gain, with too much.
You can't do it. if you're putting so much output in the pickups, you're losing highs, losing that tone to sweetness. Well,
that's all part of the tone, the highs.
You remember, Michael, when the Super Distortions came out. Everybody put the Super Distortions, and I remember trying them, and it's like, I can't get any highs out of it. I can't get anything out of it.
Yeah, it's...
And then people started going back to the PAFs. This is with humbuckers, because the PAFs had lower output, but they had more tone. You could get squeals and harmonics.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful pickups, yeah. So I want this pickup, the neck pickup, to be fat and big like that. This amp is not giving you it very much because we have it at a very low volume. Then I want the neck split here between middle and neck to be almost jazzy.
That's a glassy sound. Yeah.
But then the super glass is the middle pickup, which is this. Then I want the clucky sound back here. And then I want bright and telly-like back here. That's all I want out of it.
That's all.
Yeah, go for
that's
it.
That's all.
Lance. Make that guitar.
Yeah. Now,
walk
Lance.
In the park. Anybody could do that. Yeah.
Lance, are those, is that like the Carl Verheyen type of speakers, or I mean pickups, or is that?
Yeah. They're very close, you know. We had to go through several iterations of pickups.
So they're different than the standard that you put.
And they're especially for him. The guitar is also got some features that Carl wanted, and we just got lucky.
Can you mention some of the features that are
specific? He's got low torque pots in there.
Yeah, I got low torque pots.
He's got a different bridge. He's got a slightly wider string spacing.
I've got I wire my tone so that this tone, the first tone, is for the neck and middle pickup, and the back tone is for the back pickup, because that's the one pickup you really need. You know, and if I want to be Roy Buchanan, I can do that. Or if I want to be a wah-wah.
And nobody plays the switch like you do.
That's right.
You know, Carl, you watch him play live, he's playing the switch as much as
another form of expression.
Yeah.
You can play a lick. And move it around. It's funny because the microphone picks it up. That's the switch right there.
Yeah, well, and also too, you're not cranked up. You wouldn't hear it on stage. But.
Yeah, you sure wouldn't. So
he's also got that floating bridge set up, which is
that's another thing we worked on.
Now, are these more gain than the standard pickups you make? Less gain, so they're actually even more.
Yeah, I mean,
see, my tremolo is set up like this. My G goes up to a B flat. My B goes up to a C sharp, and my E goes up to an F. So,
we have to tune that with the springs.
How many springs?
Three springs, and we tune it so that that's all balanced, and it pulls up and stops right at the note,
and it stays perfectly in tune.
The block on the bottom of the bridge, is that anything? Is that heavier than normal?
No, it's a steel block, we only use that bridge for Carl's guitars.
Oh, okay.
It's a slightly wider spacing. It's 2 3/16.
But I'm not a pain in the butt, am I? Not like some of those other
guys. You call me up, you say you want the best guitar in the world, and
no biggie.
Anybody could do that.
Now, how do you, anything you do special for the nut to stop it from binding? Because I noticed that smooth.
We put a lot of work into it, you know.
I use something called, some weird little Radio Shack product called Archer Lube, but I think you guys use something cooler.
We also grease it, but you got to start out with very, very smooth slots, and so we sand the crap out of them up to 1,000 grit inside the slots.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder.
It doesn't just happen. You know,
because I'm hearing a lot of new guys using the roller bridges like the Wilkinson, but it seems like you don't need it.
You don't, that will like any nut, sooner or later, the strings will saw their way
the
down.
D string's getting a little buzzy when you hear it acoustically, but, you know.
Right. But
I'll be over.
Let's turn it up, Carl. It'll be fine. But, you know, I'm all for that because we're about tone.
Yeah, it sounds
good.
You know,
you start throwing a lot of metal all over the thing, it's going to change it. In fact, everything changes it to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Whether it's audible or not is the question. But
that's so true.
They stack up.
Yeah. Well, that's what I noticed, like, with the Floyds. The Floyd changed the sound of the guitar, the bridge.
No bottom end for me. I have one guitar left with Floyd on it. But I can't, it doesn't have any bottom.
But even on the top, it gets, you know, it has different... You get different harmonics when you. Yeah. I like to ping a little bit and do harmonics, and it's different. It doesn't respond the same.
You know, there's a few things that Leo got really right, and one of them is his bridge because it's so musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can play an interesting chord like this. Sorry. And just shake it subtly, and it's beautiful. I mean, I'm doing that with the vibrato bar very mm-hmm. lightly, but I can also go.
Yeah, no, it's not. Cool. It's really nice.
You get a touch.
Less
with it.
Is
it
definitely
works.
More.
Now he Carl sent me a clip, and I want to play this because we're almost out of time, and then I have a clip that'll take us out, but it's from the same song, "Riding the Bean."
Oh yeah,
I want to play this clip because this shows your guitar. You use this guitar.
Actually, I used Lance's T-Bone guitar, which is the Tele version. So
okay, let's take a listen of this. It's really killer. You got to hear this. A killer, but that's the T-Bone, and I just want to mention one of the things about the T-Bone. You got to check out, first of all, Lance's website, lslinstruments.com. He has a killer paisley guitar, color guitar. I mean, when I was at the shop, if you look on the Flow Guitar site, you'll see pictures of the fact it is killer. Your wife designed the paisley design.
Nice. And there's tiny little LSL logos embedded in it.
Yeah, it's very, very
keeps cool. The drummer busy.
I hate going there because I go, God, I'm going to need one of these too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I need one of these too.
The T-Bone was the first one you got.
I know.
It was named Alicia,
which is my mom's name, and you didn't know that.
I didn't know that, so.
And you know what? I was doing a session for a country artist, and I brought out this 1960 Tele Custom of mine that John Fogerty offered me $45,000 for one day. I kept it, and now I'm sorry I did because the T-Bone kicks its butt. We recorded left and right, and we, you know, same part. You know, we had some kind of a country part. And at the end of the session, I go, let's solo this one. The old Telecaster sounds dark and swampy, so it's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't do the Tele thing as much as the LSL does.
Well, the Tele thing did me a good thing because it got you the signature.
That's
it got
right.
you to call me.
That's right.
I figured if I was going to make this style guitar, Strat-style guitars, that the day Carl was playing one, we did it, you know. Because, he called
I'm
me
honored.
and I could do one for him. It's like okay, you can do it.
Right.
You can make stress.
Well, he definitely pushes the tone of the guitar. He's exploiting a lot more than most people.
Well, plus he
I hear with a Strat.
They're dry. I mean, come on.
That's true.
But I love Strats, man. Heart and soul is in Strat. Desert Island guitar. Actually, yeah. This is the Desert Island guitar for me.
Yeah.
If I had this guitar and a Princeton on the Desert Island, I'd be happy forever. And maybe a couple pedals and a Marshall and a
Vox AC30, a couple of twins.
And that high watt.
Was a slide on that last track? Was that the Tatelli?
No, that's a Supro dual tone from 1956 that I have. Isn't that cool?
That's a great one. The ending clip I'm going to play is the main slide lead on there.
Oh, cool.
So it's, yeah, no, and I want people to realize that LSL makes their own pickups. They make the bridge, all the parts are made there. It's their. I mean, that's the best quality control. There's nothing brought in. It's all there, made there.
Yeah. Well, we don't make the pots or the tuners.
That's all right.
Someday.
But someday. You're working on it.
Yeah. But I mean, like Henry Ford and start a rubber plant down in South
America. Or, yeah, I'll make briquettes out of the briquette company.
That's true, no. But the T-Bone, the ones that we had when you brought over to the show, when we had you on the show, they have that Tully spank. I mean, really, it just... cuts. I mean, it definitely has that tone.
That is a great guitar.
So anyway, quick, LSLinstruments.com. Check it out, and you'll see this model on there.
CV Special.
And then CarlVerheyen.com, your website.
You got to know how to spell Verheyen. V-E-R-H-E-Y-E-N, like Verheyen.
Okay.
Then you're there.
And then anything else coming up? New album?
Working on a new album right now, and it will be out probably early next year. And I've got quite a few songs finished for it. There's four more to record.
Okay.
And then I just came out with a solo acoustic record called Alone, which came out in March. So I've been doing about six or seven solo acoustic shows around the country. Mm-hmm. And then embarked on a 2-week festival tour in Europe. Just got home from that last Sunday.
Yes.
So now it's like in and out of town between now and the end of October. And then Supertramp's going to do a tour in Europe of 29 arenas starting the end of October.
Oh, okay.
Right through to like the middle of Christmas. So,
well, after when the new album comes out, we're out of time now, but we definitely have to have you back. This is amazing.
Oh,
it's
man.
Just great.
Can't wait.
And then, Michael, give me your information on your song.
Well, the only information I can give you is my email address, because what I do is I send a song out every month on the first day of the month. I ask people to donate $12 for the year. I give half the money to charity, and I keep half. Well, I give all of it to charity. It's not that much money, but it's called Song Club. And I just send out – I have 100 and some odd songs, and I'm 4 years into it, and I still got – like 100 songs.
He's still writing. He's very
prolific. I tell the people, if you don't want to get any more songs, let me know, because he's going to be coming for 8 more years.
Wow, that's awesome.
But mharrington45@yahoo.com, that's my email.
There you go.
If anybody wants to send me there.
No, he's been writing for years, and next time I'll bring the clip of the stuff I played for your one of your songs.
Oh my God, that stuff we did so many years ago?
Yeah, many, many years ago. But it was fun. Anyway, I'm going to play the last clip as part of the Bean, writing the Bean, and this is with the slide. Slide guitar. So anyway, thank you again, Carl. Lance, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And don't forget to check out the December 30th show in 2013, where we did a whole thing on the LSL guitars. And we're definitely going to have you come back, and we got to check out the guitars. They're just always great. And Mike, it's great to have you here.
Thank you, Jim.
Everybody have a great week. And this is the Bean and that slide guitar. This is a great slide guitar lead.